welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we're going to be discussing Darkland's March by Randall Standridge. Cheers to starting the conversation.
Darkland's March is a great Standridge piece. It is in 4-4 all the way throughout. It's pretty brisk tempo. It starts in the key of concert E-flat. It modulates to the key of concert F. It does have split clarinet, alto, trumpet parts, in typical Standridge fashion, lots of percussion, which of course you could choose to pare down if you wanted, but I think this one needs 6 percussionists, mm-hmm. To kind of take care of all of the needs. Doesn't change tempo, stays similar style until you get to what we would consider the trio section,
yep.
Right? But great piece. We love Standridge.
Yes. And this piece is very versatile because you can play it as an actual march at your UIL contest. You can play it at your fall concert as a march. You're introducing the students to march style because it is a lot like a march, with like the same, you know, format of a traditional one, but it's got more of like a dark feel to it. So it's really versatile, which is great. It's got great styles as well. So the whole piece starts out with upper people having the melody, and it's a dotted 8/16th rhythm, and this goes on and on throughout the whole piece. 1, 2, 3, and the 3 is marked as housetop accents. So the whole time you want to teach the students to play that the same style all the way throughout. 1, 2, 3.
And same with 1, 2, 3. There's not a single time in this that the dotted eighth note should touch the 16th note.
Right.
Not a single time.
Yep. There's a lot of dynamics that get really, really soft, and then you build them back up, or it's forte for 2 measures and piano for 2 measures. So really challenging your kids to do all those dynamics is good too. So as I mentioned, the flutes and trumpets, clarinet, they kind of start out with the melody. Then the whole band at measure 3 drops down to mezzo piano, and we have accents, and we're building it up to the end of measure 4. And at the end of 4, the low people, bass, clarinet, berry, trombone, and tuba have 3, 4, 1. And 3, and 1. And then they get softer, snare drums getting softer and softer as well. And then we get into measure 7, and 7 is the melody portion, and we have a first and a second ending here.
Okay, now I want to talk for just a second about, we've talked already about Katie addressed the housetop accents on beat 3 of those eighth notes, and then the style of the dotted 8/16th. I would spend time playing that rhythm, 1, 2, 3, on a concert F with everyone in your ensemble, or sizzling. We do a lot of that in our band hall, so I can hear their air. And then I can also hear the strength of articulation on the 16th note. That is something I feel like I'm constantly having to work on with my students. They get lazy on the articulation on the 16th note. So either practicing it on a concert F or sizzling, hearing them go down the row or whatever, just sizzle. Like if that is going to be super helpful and a quick way for you to address something that happens 3.5 million times in the piece.
Yeah, and they have it over and over, even in the first, like in the measure, they have 1, 2, 3, 4. So you have to do it multiple times, even in one measure. So the first time through at 7, the melody is the people that I just mentioned. It's just trumpet. And then the second time through, the flutes and the oboes and the clarinets join the trumpets. So first time through, just the trumpets. You have to make sure that you're teaching them to not breathe on the bar line between 10 and 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, don't breathe. 1, 2, 3. So teaching them to be sneaky with their breaths, either breathing after the dotted eighth, between the dotted eighth and the 16th, or between the 2 staccato eighth notes, wherever it is. But don't let them breathe every 2 measures. They need to have no breaths written in.
The way this is written, I really like the way Standridge writes this, and he does this in a lot of his pieces. So like first time through, we're featuring trumpet, right? Second time through, even though we've added other supporting cast instruments on that melody, really the important part is the counter melody,
right,
which is a new part that comes in on horn and alto. He does that a lot in this piece.
Yep.
So it's really good for teaching. And like, again, Katie mentioned that this really is the format of a traditional
march. Right.
So you can teach that. Like, okay, first time through on the first strain, we want to feature this instrument. And second time through, we want to feature this instrument, mm-hmm. just like you would do on a traditional march. But yep. I think keeping that same formula and making sure as you attack this piece that we are prioritizing correctly.
Absolutely. The lows just have the same kind of ostinato rhythm, 1 and 3 and 1 2 3 4 1. And 3, and that beat 4, having the tenuto marking is really important to teach that style. I also like this march because the tuba, Barry sax, bass, clarinet gets to do cool stuff every once in a while. They just have like little eighth notes leading into the next measure, 3 and 4 and 1, and it's like kind of chromatic-y. So that part is really neat whenever it comes back. It comes back multiple times, but in this case, it's in measure 10 leading into measure 11. Like Laura already mentioned, second time through, we're going to feature the horn and the sax, and then we take the second ending with a hard cutoff on beat 4 from the whole band, which I would mark in their part, a slash, yep. off on 4.
Release the time.
Yep. At 16, we come in and we're soft. This is like a traditional march. We're going to do quiet for 2 measures, loud for 2 measures. It's the melody is in the flute and oboe. And then the saxophone has a counter melody and euphonium is also playing. Again, kind of like a traditional march. Then the trumpets come in with a response and it's loud and it's forte. So it's like kind of creepy is what I taught the students. Like kind of like you're in the background. 1 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and long. Then the trumpet, bum, 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 da-dum, dum. So it's like different styles.
I would long also, the way that this is written, the woodwinds play 1 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3. It's all slurred and it's an eighth note release followed by an eighth rest. Like I would write on my kids' parts A-H to remind them like that needs to end in a vowel sound. Ah, ah, like don't clip that note short. Make it as long as possible. Ta, ta. Lift and keep it open throat release and don't like it looks like it should be short.
Yeah, I drew a tenuto marking on mine. Be. Yeah, yeah, definitely keeping it long. And then the trumpets come in and they have mm-hmm. that cool little moment. And then we go back. The lows have another 3 and 4 and 1 going into the next part. So they're pretty important in this piece. Then we go back to the upper people. They're quiet again. They have the same little moment. The trumpets now get joined with the flute, oboe, and clarinet on the melody when it goes forte again. Then we do the same thing, a first and second ending. On the second ending, we all have accents, and then we come back into the same melody from before at 25, with trumpet, flute, oboe, clarinet on the melody, sax and horn on the mm-hmm. counter melody.
Now, snare, by the way, we haven't addressed what's happening in percussion, but percussion is doing a lot of the same rhythm, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 that the melody has in this particular section here at 25. So use that, like have the snare play along with the melody players and match articulation and make sure that they are moving together. The mallet part has that as well.
But also make sure it's not loud.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be careful, just like on a march, you don't want the snare drum to be super loud, even though it's active. Then we end this little melody section with 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, and we have a key change. We go from E flat to F, and it just goes straight into it. And this is like the trio section. So the lows kind of have 1, 2, 3, 4.
And I would think of that like this, it's staccato quarter notes for the accompaniment all throughout this section. This is all softer. I would think of that like I would teach my kids, think about that like you're tiptoeing. You're trying to sneak, mm-hmm. be real sneaky. So just tiptoe. Otherwise, that can end up sounding like the psycho. And that's not what we want. We want delicate tiptoe.
Yep. And then we're getting softer. And then the clarinet, euphonium, and tenor sax comes in with the melody. And it's lyrical. So we have the soft tiptoeing, like Laura mentioned, behind them. And then we have this really flowing, beautiful melody. I would absolutely feature euphoniums here.
Definitely.
And if they can use vibrato, great. If they cannot, that's okay too. But you want to do like a 2-measure crescendo, a 2-measure decrescendo. They have the melody over and over and over throughout this section. Trombones are having to play E naturals and A naturals on the accompaniment. So just making sure that we're in tune That's something I remember was kind of an issue for my band when we played this.
This color grouping in the melody of the euphonium, which Katie said should be the lead voice, and I agree completely. Then
and the clarinet section is way below the
clarinet staff. Is playing in the shallow register, yep. Which I love that color combination mm-hmm. of shallow clarinet with euphonium. And then there's tenor sax, and it's in a really easy, middle, comfortable range for tenor sax, but it will be easy for your tenor sax to dominate that texture, and that's not what you want. Make sure that euphonium is lead. I would put clarinet second after euphonium, and then just a little smattering of tenor sax in there.
Yep. Then at 42, a bunch of the high people come in on beat four, and now we have this like flowing section again. They're the melody. Everything is really connected. You want to make sure that everybody is, you're either making a choice for them to all breathe in the same spot or your stagger breathing. Mm-hmm. I stagger breathed whenever I played this piece. It's 1 and 2 and 3, 4 and 1 and 2 and 3, 4 and 1 and 2 and 3. So I told like, you're the A's, you're going to breathe on the even measures after beat three. Y'all are going to breathe on the odd measures after beat three.
And that's exactly how I would approach this, because otherwise it sounds incredibly immature. You will have everyone breathing every measure. Mm-hmm. 1 and 2 and 3, 4 and 1 and 2 and 3.
Or every
four
two
and
measures.
One. Yeah, I mean, like it just sounds choppy.
Yep. Then there's like a little half note counter melody underneath it, which also needs to sound flowing. Then the lows get to be staccato still underneath doing the tiptoe. The bells have the melody here as well. And then we're all off again on 1, 2, 3, short beat three. And then the trumpets come in with the melody again. 1, 2, and 3. And the clarinets, clarinet one has it with them, or both clarinets. And then there's a little trill that starts on beat four. You can cut it down so it's not too much, or if you aren't super loud, that's okay. I remember the alto being really loud whenever I played this piece. It's up on an F sharp, and it just like, it kind of cut through, but it could have just been the kids, you know, and overplaying.
The whole ensemble, when you have these trills, so like trumpet, horn, clarinet, 1, 2, and 3.
Trill, 1, 2, 3, and
the whole ensemble lands together. Yep. And those trill instruments, I think it's really important to practice that, because they don't always come out of the trill in time.
Yeah, and it's those same housetop accents from the beginning. Snare again is continuing to be extremely active this whole time, so just making sure that it's not overpowering the group. Then we have the kind of like a recap from the very beginning, like the intro. Everybody has the melody or the rhythm together. In 55-56, we get down to mezzo piano again. 57-58, we're growing up. 59, it's the same as before. The trumpet, the oboe, and the flute have the melody, counter melody, and the horn and sax. Lots of accents this time, though. Mm-hmm. Again, same thing. Don't breathe on long notes. Make sure you're holding all the way through. Trumpets should not be breathing on the bar line. It's
make sure
literally
the
same
balance
thing as before.
Here is not like everyone's playing and it's now the second or third time that they have had this part.
Yeah, the trombone part is more featured here. Mm-hmm. That's like how a traditional march would go too, right? Like they need to be brought out.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the trombone, euphonium, tenor sax part. But again, focus on trombone at 59. They have the more important melody. The trumpets and flutes can kind of come down mm-hmm. a little bit.
And we've heard that part.
Yeah, we've already heard it, right. Then we have the flowing part at 67 again from the upper woodwinds. The tenor voices go back to playing things tenuto. Again, not breathing in the same spots. This is a part where it needs to sound very seamless. Make sure even your lows on their half notes, you're saying you're going to breathe in 67, but you're going to breathe in 68, and making sure that they're all breathing in different spots. Then we kind of come out of it in the end of 73 with an accent on beat four. We go back into the accented style. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1 and 2. And then the lows again. So it's always the low reeds and tuba that have that 3 and 4. And then we're all quieted and we're going to lead up. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then this horn part comes in with the last cool thing. 4, 1, 3. Rest. 2. And then lows, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1, 2 and 3 and, and that's the end. So this is such a great piece. The kids love it. Everybody gets to have a special part, as we've already mentioned. There's not just like one melodic part that's more important. The percussion is kept busy. So this would be a really fun piece to program on your fall concert because it's kind of spookier sounding. It would be a great march to do for UIL as well, or any time.
Especially if you're wanting something that's not traditional but still has some teaching elements, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we hope you will consider programming Darklands March in the future. And thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.